July 24th, 1856. George and Jane Howard Barnes, both 41 years old, found themselves a few miles west of Iowa City with their five children, 15-year-old Margaret, 12-year-old Betsy, 11-year-old Esther, 8-year-old Deborah, and 4-year-old William. And today, Jane had just given birth to Mary Jane, making six. For the past few weeks, they had been preparing to cross the Great Plains and begin their new life in Zion, as they called it. To say that George and Jane and their now six children were about to begin their journey would be inaccurate, since the family had already come a long way. 14 years earlier, in Manchester, England, George and Jane Barnes, then a young couple with a small daughter, found themselves converts to a 12-year-old faith. It was the Industrial Revolution, and the young couple had left their ancestral home near the border of Scotland to find work in the textile mill of a larger city. The American Latter-day Saints had recently arrived in the Great Salt Lake Valley and were eager to build up Zion and to make their desert blossom as the rose. Brigham Young had begun encouraging European converts, and in that day, any adult Latter-day Saint was a convert, to immigrate to the Salt Lake Valley. And in 1849, the Perpetual Immigration Fund was instituted to assist the poorer converts to cross the Atlantic and come across the plains in covered wagons. But travel by ox-drawn covered wagons was slow, not to mention costly. And 6 years later, Brigham Young announced a new plan to have the European immigrants build hand carts, essentially a 4-foot by 3-foot box atop a pair of wagon wheels that you put all of your stuff in and cross the plains on foot. Franklin D. Richards, president of the LDS mission in Manchester, England, calling on English converts, said, "The Mohammedan will perform a long and weary pilgrimage of months and even years to kiss the tomb of his prophet. The Roman Catholic will endure severe penance with the hope of saving his soul from purgatory. The Hindu devotee will suffer self-inflicted tortures of the most excruciating nature to obtain the favor of his deity. Then shall not the saints be ready to prove that their faith is worth more than the life of the body or the riches of the world?" May 25th, 1856. Encouraged by his brother William, who had already made the journey, George, his wife Jane, and their children boarded the Horizon in Liverpool, England, with other European converts. After arriving at the port of Boston, they boarded a train which would take them to the end of the line in Iowa City. I wonder if they passed any Unitarian churches in Boston. The closest thing Unitarians have to Zion. From there, they walked a few miles west at an outfitting point on July 8th. Three previous handcart companies had already been successful making the journey across the plains to the Salt Lake Valley earlier that summer. But the immigrants from the Horizon had arrived late in the season. July 28, 1856. Howard and Jane, with their four-day-old infant and five older children, began their journey, pushing and pulling their handcart toward the Promised Land, along with other members of the Martin Handcart Company. After pulling their handcart 277 miles for nearly a month, the Barnes family arrived at what was then called Winter Quarters, Nebraska, on August 22nd, and spent the next few days making repairs. August 27th, 1856, unbeknownst to church officials in the Salt Lake Valley, the Martin Handcart Company resumed its journey west. They were leaving incredibly late in the season, and had he been aware of it, Brigham Young would probably not have allowed them to leave, but remain in winter quarters until the following spring. October 19th, 1856. George and Jane had been pulling their handcarts across the plains for nearly 3 months. I doubt we can appreciate how tired they would have been. They did not have hiking shoes in those days. Averaging 15 to 30 miles a day, shoes, which were often poorly made then, would sometimes fall apart, leaving travelers to pull their hand carts barefoot. A few days earlier, in an effort to lighten their loads, the exhausted party left behind several pounds of bedding, a decision I'm sure they regretted, as an early and severe winter had just arrived. They had just crossed the North Platte River. It was a bitterly cold day, and the river was very wide, and the current was strong. The company had to wade waist deep in icy water, dodging chunks of ice. Some men carrying women, some women carrying children. While still wet from the ordeal, George, Jane, and the other members of the Martin Company were greeted by a severe storm of snow, hail, and strong winds, which blasted them with sand. Hypothermia began claiming lives very quickly. The storm continued for the next 3 days. Dozens of people began to die. October 24th, 1856. The company had become stranded in 2 feet of snow at a place now called Martin's Cove. With temperatures below freezing, the deaths continued. John Bond, who was 12 years old at the time, gave a graphic account. Some died laying side by side with their hands entwined. In other cases, they were found as if they had just offered a fervent prayer and their spirit had taken flight while in the act. Some died sitting by the fire, some were singing hymns or eating crusts of bread. George Barnes had spent the last 2 nights standing guard in the camp. Exhaustion and freezing temperatures had taken their toll on him. He was among those who did not survive. The ground was frozen so hard that grave digging was impossible, and George was most likely laid to rest alongside other members of the company with just a covering of snow. Jane, now widowed with 6 children, had to continue the journey without him. While other members of the company, her friends, most likely helped her and the older children pull the cart and care for the younger children, the rest of the journey could not possibly have been anything but very, very hard for her. October 28th, 1856. Upon learning of the desperate condition of the Willie and Martin Handcart Company's church leaders in Salt Lake had dispatched a rescue team, which had just found the Martin Company 4 days after George had died. At that point, the company abandoned their handcarts and continued the 300 miles to Salt Lake in covered wagons. George's brother William, already in Salt Lake, received Jane and the children skeleton thin. One of the daughters had reportedly lost all of her toes to the frostbite. It's incredible to me that they managed to keep the newborn Mary Jane alive during this ordeal. Years later, Jane's daughter Betsy would marry. Her daughter Elizabeth would eventually marry a young man by the name of Sidney Pittman, my great-grandfather, who, like George and Jane, was a convert to the LDS faith from England. 147 years after George and Jane began their trek, I, like them, found myself a convert to a new faith, or at least a faith that was new to me and all but unheard of to the rest of my family. And I would soon leave my home to begin a new life. While it was difficult for me, my own story is much less dramatic, and I can't compare it to what the Barnes family had to go through. I am no longer a part of the faith that inspired George, Jane, and Sidney to leave their homes behind, most likely never seeing the rest of their family again. I honestly don't know what they would think of me. I hope they might enjoy my singing or laugh at a few of my jokes. Their stories continue to be an inspiration to me. I'm thankful to be a part of a family that did not forget their stories, and I am very, very thankful for my own connection to the remarkable stories of my pioneer ancestors. Thank you.